Hello, I'm Georgina Marshall, Global Head of Research for ISS, and welcome to the latest edition of the ISS 2020 Proxy Bulletin podcast series. This June podcast focuses on two of the largest and most active European markets, France and the UK. Joining me to discuss 2020 season trends and to provide roadmaps for remaining AGM activity in their markets are Cedric Lavery, head of our French research team from Paris, and Roshana Neergudkar, a senior member of our UK research team from London. During our earlier European Bulletin podcasts, we discussed the growing impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on AGM calendars across Europe. At the time, some companies were still considering their options for holding AGMs amid a wave of stay-in-place orders and country lockdowns. With most European countries now reopening to at least some extent, it's a good time to take a step back to look at the effect of the pandemic has had on the 2020 proxy season so far. So, Cedric, going to you first in Paris, how has the French AGM season been so far?
The 2020 proxy season for the French market has been deeply impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. The usual structure and cadence of AGM was disrupted when Health Suisse made it impossible to convene physical meetings. In response to the pandemic, the French government passed ordinances on March 25th that allowed companies to delay for up to 3 months the auditor's validation of the accounts, and also the convening of the annual general meeting. Notably, these ordinances also permitted companies to hold their AGM without the physical presence of shareholders, mainly via the use of video conferences. And notably, the right of shareholders to ask questions during the meeting or to amend or propose resolution during the meeting were suspended during this period. About one third of the large French company chose to postpone their AGM and to schedule new meeting dates in the second half of June. Regarding smaller companies, since they tend to hold their meeting in the later part of the season, postponement was less frequent at this firm. At this time, however, there are still a few dozen of French companies that have not yet to announce the date for their rescheduled AGM. Many of the video conference AGM were one-sided affairs. Most of the video conferences did not allow any interaction with shareholders. Some of them were even pre-recorded. Company explained that the complexity of the custodian chain did not allow them to properly identify shareholders. Such proxy plumbing problems made it impossible for shareholders to vote online or to ask questions.
Yeah, so it sounds like many French meetings were quite pale imitations of AGMs from past years. Did the pandemic also have an impact on meeting agendas?
Yes, the COVID-19 crisis impacted both the form and the substance of AGM in France. Pronouncement from multiple regulatory authorities put pressure on companies to behave responsibly in the wake of the pandemic, especially regarding dividends and executive remuneration.
That's interesting. You mentioned dividends first. How were dividends impacted?
Some of the pronouncements were aimed at specific industry sectors. The European banking and insurance regulator, for example, asked companies not to distribute dividends or to implement buyback until the end of the crisis. Other calls were directed at firms that receive government support. The French government asked companies that benefited from the state assistance for periods of partial unemployment to decrease dividend and mandated those receiving guaranteed loans or deferrals of social and fiscal charges to cancel dividend. Those pronouncements, coupled with economic uncertainty over the impact of the pandemic, led most French companies to reduce or cancel their dividend. In some cases, it was not exactly clear whether this action were required due to the company use of public assistance scheme or were driven by voluntary decision by board of directors. Nevertheless, the situation pushed many companies to better explain their dividend policy to their shareholders before the AGMs.
And what about changes to remuneration in the French market? How widespread were executive pay cuts and any other changes in pay practices?
Regarding remuneration, most executives and board members at larger companies decided to waive part of their remuneration packages. Typically, a portion of their base salary and bonus, but also in a few rare cases, also a long-term incentive. Some of this waiver will last for the duration of the crisis, others for the complete 2020 fiscal years. For companies whose employees receive state assistance for period of partial unemployment, the French Association of Large Issuers, AFEP, also asked its members to waive 25% of their remuneration during the period and to reduce dividend by 20%. Also, many boards and remuneration committee experienced difficulties in establishing targets for the variable components of their pay program. The collision of pandemic-driven economic uncertainty with the new CNP framework transposed from the part two of the shareholder right directive resulted in some company adding discretion and derogation or exemption provision into the remuneration policy. This experimentation led to mixed results. Some companies simply chose to copy and paste broad derogation language from the French commercial code into their policy. And such blank check policies allow boards to modify any element of the remuneration programs without limitation. Fortunately, other companies and their remuneration committee propose well-defined policies that sought to reflect really the specific type of discretion that could be needing during this period.
That's an interesting mix there then. You mentioned SRD2. Were there any other issues that emerged from the implementation of SRD2 this year?
Yes, the new CNP framework multiplied the number of pay-related resolution on ballots. It's also produced some confusion by company on what the law requires versus what are good practices. Last year, shareholders voted on remuneration policy and report of the chairman, the CEO, and the vice CEO. In 2020, shareholders had to vote on the same items, plus a remuneration policy and report for non-executive director, and a global remuneration report covering all those individuals. That global report was probably the most daunting for shareholders as it covers remuneration that is already covered individually in the other resolution. The difference between those reports is the sanction in case of rejection. If individual reports are rejected, the cash, variable, and exceptional remuneration are lost. If the global report is rejected, it is the fees of board members that are frozen until a new policy is proposed. And if the shareholder also rejects this new policy, the fees are lost. Considering those consequences, we used vote recommendation against the global report as an expression of discontent concerning boards that were not sufficiently responsive to substantial dissent at previous AGM, or where they excluded some type of remuneration from the individual votes through the use mostly of related party transaction, employment contract, or through subsidiaries. Those global remuneration reports were expected to provide another novelty item. Pay ratio comparing the pay of the main executive, generally the CEO and the chair, and the median and average employee over the last 5 years. Many firms, it'd be a poorly written law by providing ratios that were calculated using holding companies with very few or even no employees at all. Most companies also failed to communicate or they plan to adjust LTIP grants that were made to executives following large stock price drop to avoid windfalls. Those adjustments, or the lack of adjustment, will appear in next year's remuneration report. And shareholders will probably discover some cases where the potential gain from those LTIPs grants will far outweigh the voluntary waiver of salary for the months of crisis.
Thanks, Cedric. So many things to watch going into later this year and next year then. Just before we wrap on France, are there any other French developments worth noting for the for 2020 so far?
Yes, for the first time in France this season, we saw a number of external shareholder resolutions filed by shareholders on environmental topics. The first ENS proposal offered at Vinci was rejected by the company board, which argues that it was not respecting the distinct power of the director and of the shareholder meeting. The second ENS resolution offered at Total sought to avoid the fate of the Vinci resolution by formatting the request as an amendment of the bylaws. And the tactic work at the board of Total had to include the resolution on the agenda. But it created also other legal and governance problems. This new effort demonstrated that the framework for shareholder proposal in France is probably not well suited to the consideration of ENS resolution. As a result, we are already seeing market participants seeking change, or at least for clarification on what shareholders and boards can do to engage on ENS concern at shareholder meeting.
Okay, thank you, Cedric. And I'll now bring in Roshana, who is a senior analyst on our UK research team in London. Roshana, welcome. And firstly, what have been some of the implications of COVID-19 on AGM logistics and timings in the UK this year?
Hi, Georgina. The coronavirus pandemic has prompted many UK companies to take alternative approaches to convening AGMs. While stay-at-home measures have recently been slightly relaxed, physical attendance at AGMs by members of the public is still restricted. In late March, the UK government published compulsory stay-at-home measures, which prohibited public gatherings of more than two people. But shortly thereafter, the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy announced guidance on AGM logistics, which detailed how companies could convene meetings with a small number of attendees by providing additional flexibility to form quorum by telephone or by electronic means. UK law empowers board chairs to preserve order at general meetings, including the ability to refuse entry to any person whose attendance would breach the stay-at-home measures. Purely virtual meetings are rare in the UK, so few companies are authorized to hold e-meetings, as the practice is not typically allowed under their articles of association. Prior to the pandemic, some investors had raised concerns about moves to eliminate physical shareholder meetings. Critics, however, argue that virtual meetings may hinder meaningful exchanges between management and shareholders and enable executives to perhaps avoid uncomfortable questions. In view of the logistical complications brought on by the novel coronavirus, though, some companies tabled new or amended articles that would permit virtual-only meetings. Examples include Ocado Group, Standard Life Aberdeen, and 888 Holdings, to name a few. The voting results on these articles changes were not overwhelmingly positive, suggesting that some investors remain concerned by the longer-term implications of virtual-only meetings. For example, the resolution at Standard Life Aberdeen was defeated. 888 issued a marked announcement following the publication of its meeting notice to clarify that virtual meetings would only be utilized in exceptional circumstances that would constrain or prevent public gatherings, such as the COVID-19 outbreak. However, this clarification was enough to carry the vote. The margin of support was very small, with a significant percentage of shareholders dissenting. As of the date of today's podcast, a statutory instrument called the Corporate Insolvency and Governance Bill is working its way through the UK Parliament. The bill will give companies additional flexibility where it concerns shareholder meetings, including the place of the meeting, the conduct of the meeting, and the deadline for holding AGMs. Notably, virtual meetings will temporarily be allowed under the bill, regardless of a company's articles. If the bill completes, this change will apply for all AGMs to be held until September 30th.
Okay, thanks for that recap. The UK's AGM activity is typically heaviest through the months of April and May. Considering these challenges of the pandemic, were there any major changes in the distribution of meetings during the normal UK peak period?
In general, April and May meeting volumes have been a bit lower than in normal years, although most companies with December financial year ends will have convened their AGMs by June 30th. Despite the pandemic, there was a sense of urgency. UK companies are legally required to hold their AGMs within 6 months of their accounting reference date. This requirement was not relaxed by the UK government in time for the vast majority of UK companies with December year ends. Many smaller companies held out until the last possible moment, and as a result, there will be an unusual surge of shareholder meetings on June 29th and 30th. Our team have already processed more than 70 UK AGMs that will be convened over these 2 days, making it the busiest two-day period so far in 2020. In a more typical year, the busiest day by meeting volume would fall in late May.
Yeah, that is quite a change for a much busier June than usual for UK AGMs. Given that data, are there any UK AGM meeting projections you can share for July and the weeks ahead?
Well, as many of our listeners will know, the UK market typically sees a second peak of AGMs in July as companies with March financial year ends hold their AGMs. Based on the upcoming meetings logged in our system so far, it appears that this will remain a busy period in 2020. However, with the new legislation pending, which would temporarily relax AGM deadlines, it is possible that at least some of the meetings typically seen during the second peak period could be postponed and be more evenly distributed over the coming months.
Okay, so more to come on that then. And moving on from AGM logistics and timing changes, COVID-19 has of course impacted many companies and the broader capital markets in many profound ways. Are there any notable UK regulatory developments related to, say, dividend payouts or remuneration or other areas to highlight?
Well, taking a cue from the European Central Bank's guidance, which Cedric had mentioned earlier in the podcast, the Prudential Regulation Authority of the Bank of England issued letters to the large UK banks requesting them to suspend dividends and buybacks on ordinary shares until the end of 2020. While these limitations were not imposed on the insurance sector, insurers were asked to consider, as quoted, the need to protect policyholders and maintain safety and soundness. And many boards had to balance these concerns with the fact that many shareholders are pensioners or workers who may rely on dividends as vital income, as reiterated by the Investment Association, which is the UK's trade body for investment managers. The PRA has also effectively banned the payment of cash bonuses to senior staff, including all material risk takers at UK banks. Beyond the banking sector, many companies have taken a variety of steps to curtail pay, such as enforcing temporary pay cuts on executives and directors, and as well as deferring or cancelling bonuses. Sharp focus has been placed on companies that have availed themselves of support from the public purse, either through the government's job retention scheme or by accessing cheap debt, as some stakeholders are keen to ensure that directors share the pain brought on by the health pandemic.
Yes, absolutely. And interesting to hear about these steps being taken to conserve capital during the crisis. What's been done to help companies access any additional capital during the period?
Well, to support companies through this uncertain time, the Preemption Group, which is the representative body which sets the UK market expectations on shareholders' preemption rights, had issued updated guidance in April. And this was done primarily to help companies access emergency capital, which may be required to maintain solvency and address liquidity issues. The temporary guidance recommends that investors consider, on a case-by-case basis, supporting non-preemptive issuances of up to 20% of a company's issued share capital. This effectively doubles the 10% maximum typically recommended by the preemption group. Certain additional requirements were set out by the group for companies that seek this enhanced authority, including the need for the circumstances of the company to be fully explained and to conduct proper consultation with a representative sample of the company's major shareholders. The changes outlined by the preemption group are to remain in place until September 30th, at which point they will be reviewed.
Yeah, and I know that that doubling of the non-preemptive issuances limit of to 20% certainly qualifies as an unprecedented move by the preemption group. And I know we'll be keeping tabs on how this plays out after September as well. So moving on, executive pay is often an AGM battleground, of course, and this year is no exception. This year, many UK companies were due to renew the approval of their remuneration policies in the UK, due generally every 3 years, and with results that are binding, not just advisory. Is there any issue that stands out when viewing the voting results so far?
Indeed, most UK companies tabled their remuneration policies for approval in 2020. As expected, a flashpoint this year has been the issue of director pensions. So the 2018 UK Code of Corporate Governance called on companies to align the pension contribution rates for executive directors with those of their wider workforce. This position has been fortified by the UK Investment Association, which has taken a firm view that incumbent directors should not be exempt, despite concerns raised by companies around the difficulties of renegotiating contractual entitlements. Almost all FTSE 350 companies have taken steps to reduce their executive pension contributions, both for new hires and for incumbent executive directors, which is in response to the code and increasing pressure from investors. Where companies have not significantly reduced pension contributions, we have seen some large votes against. Intertek Group with 43% against, WM Morrison Supermarkets at 35% against, and Informa with 35% against are all notable outcomes.
Well, the debate and actions around pensions have certainly moved quickly since the release of that 2018 UK Corporate Governance Code. Are there any other notable vote results so far worth highlighting?
Yes. In addition to the triennial binding vote on remuneration policies, UK companies also feature an annual advisory vote on the remuneration report, and that is the implementation of the remuneration policy during the year. Thus far, three such votes have been defeated in 2020. At Playtech, 64% of votes were cast against the remuneration report, while at Capital and Counties, 68% of votes went against the remuneration report. In both instances, concerns were identified around the alignment of pay and performance. These results continued a series of contentious votes on pay at Playtech, and at Capital and Counties, there were several highly contentious pay issues highlighted, not least of which was that the remuneration committee had applied upper discretion on bonus outcomes, increasing the payouts. Lastly, just shortly before this recording, the AGM of Tesco took place, where 67% of votes were cast against the remuneration report. The company was criticized for amending the total shareholder TSR competitor group of its long-term incentive plan at the point of vesting, significantly increasing the payout.
Okay, thank you, Roshana. And finally, I know that 2020 saw the first climate-related shareholder resolution filed at any major European bank in the UK. Any observations or thoughts you can share with our listeners on this?
Correct. This shareholder resolution was filed at UK bank Barclays PLC, and it directed the bank to phase out the provision of financial services to companies in the energy sector that are not aligned with the Paris Agreement. In response to the shareholder resolution, Barclays itself also tabled a resolution which set out its ambition to become a net zero bank by 2050 and directed the group to set a strategy with targets to transition its provision of financial services across all sectors to align with the goals and timelines of the Paris Agreement. While the shareholder resolution did not pass, the level of support, with 24% of votes cast in favor, is indicative of growing investor interest in the role that large lenders play in influencing and contributing to climate change. Barclays' own resolution on tackling climate change was overwhelmingly supported, with over 99.9% of votes in favor.
Wow, a good point to end on. And thank you, Roshana, and thanks to Cedric as well. That's it for June's European Bulletin podcast. Thanks to you, our listeners, and we hope you've enjoyed the podcast. Please watch your email for the next instalment and do send any feedback or questions to bulletin@issgovernance.com. Stay safe. Goodbye for now.